scientific consensus is that we are causing global warming. And Al Gore, I used to be the next president of the United States of America. This is Patagonia, 75 years ago, and the same budget today. This is Mount Kilimanjaro, 30 years ago, and last year. Within the decade, there will be no more snows of Kilimanjaro. This is really not a political issue so much as a moral issue. Temperature increases are taking place all over the world, and that's causing stronger storms.
So no doubt many of us are very familiar with that footage there. That was a movie which came out a few years ago called An Inconvenient Truth, which Al Gore was instrumental in. And we showed it to you not for any particular purpose, you know, for any political means or anything like that. We're not motivated that way, are we? But I wanted to show that to you because there are a couple of statements that he made at the very end of that footage you may have noticed. And they were these. He said, "We have to act together to solve this global crisis." He said, "Our ability to live is what is at stake." Now that is interesting, isn't it? So we actually want to explore this a little bit tonight in the context of the subject we've been discussing, which is the return of the Lord Jesus Christ and the setting up of the kingdom. Because as we said earlier, man has it in his brain that he can solve the world's problems. And one of those problems is the problem with the planet. It is very different from when it was formed and created in the time of Adam and Eve. And we're promised that a paradise will be restored. Something has gone dramatically wrong. And what we want to do is see whether or not Al Gore has got it right, whether man can actually solve these problems that are in the world. And by doing that, what we can do is show the contrast with what God has planned with the earth when the Lord Jesus Christ returns. So he said this. He said, "Mankind is causing irreversible damage to the earth, which might affect our future." And he went on to say, "It is in the hands of man to solve the problem." Now, you might not think this is up to date. That movie came out in 2006. This was last week. All right? So last week, there was another conference that they have on a regular basis looking at the challenges with, this obviously is to do with climate change and so forth, but there are many issues, as we'll share with you tonight, regarding the environmental problem and, you know, the way that the planet has been absolutely destroyed by mankind over the last few thousand years. But this is up to date because they just had this recent conference and they're still trying to figure out how to deal with the environmental crisis and the climate change issue. And I think it is this particular issue, the climate change issue, is a real issue. I think the statistics bear it out. This here is just a slide showing how there has been an average increase in temperature over the years, quite dramatically. And as a result, in 2006, they say it was the hottest year on record. I think actually last year, probably in Canada, was the coldest year on record. We had one of the coldest winters in Ontario. But actually, the funny thing about that is, as we'll show you during the course of the evening, having extra snow is actually an impact of having, or consequence of having, warming seas. All right, so I'll show that to you grammatically later, graphically later. Again, from December 2006 to 2007 was the hottest winter on record at the time. So there does seem to be evidence for this, and you know, the issue is that if you have higher temperatures, it affects environmental, the environment, and there are environmental challenges as a result. So I just said that the issue of more snow often is associated with warming up of water. To show you this grammatically, graphically, a couple of years ago, you may recall there was just a ton of snow which dropped into Arizona, into Texas, Colorado, which was unprecedented. And the reason for that is because of the next slide I'll show you. I do have this as a graphic, like a small movie, but I'm not going to show it. This gives you the idea. What it is the temperature of the seas around the equator. And what happened is, a couple of years ago, up toward the California coast, the hot temperatures around the equator moved up to off the coast of California. And so what ended up happening, there was high evaporation and moisture, and that then got taken over the mountains, over the Rockies, and of course what happens when water goes up, it's got to come back down. It came back in the form of snow. And that's why there was so much snow. And you think, well, you think snow is associated with it getting colder. Well, actually, it was associated with getting hotter. And that's the reason why. And, you know, we saw some reference to some of these slides in that little movie there. And this gives you an idea just how dramatic the warming up has been. Those are cliff faces of ice. We're not talking about a little bit of ice that we see on the ground in the winter. We're talking about massive amounts of ice, and of course here now there's no ice field at all. And you know, Al Gore in that movie did show a couple of these pictures here, which are quite dramatic. The change that's taken place over a number of years in the glaciers around the world. And so there's just a flavour of them. Some of the ice fields around the world. The next one's quite dramatic. That one there. I mean, you can almost see the entire glacier has formed a lake now. So that's the challenge, and it's not only the glaciers which are melting, but at the poles as well, and we'll look at both the North Pole and the South Pole. This is very interesting because this is a comparison between 1979 and 2003, the same time of the year, and they're actually finding there's a dramatic change in the amount of ice being formed in the winter months over the North Pole. And in fact, it's affected Canada quite dramatically, and I'm going to show you that. In fact, it's affected the whole of that northern part to such a degree that for the first time, they believe they have a northern passage for the ships to go over the top of Canada compared to either through the canal or around the Horn of... Was it called the Horn? Is it the Horn of the Cape down at the south of South America? So they're really finding that there are significant changes taking place. And of course, industrialization has happened over the last 150 years, which if it's true, what they're saying, the temperature increase is obviously directly related to that and the increase in number of people on the planet. In fact, cows have a very high contribution to global warming. And the reason being is as the population increases, they need more cows to feed people. And cows give off more methane than everything else put together. And methane is a gas which warms up the planet. Right? So as the population increases, men and women are finding there are more challenges environmentally as a direct consequence. This is the thinning of the ice in the Arctic, and it's quite dramatic. In fact, in Finland, they actually track the thickness of the ice because the icebreakers have to go out at certain times of year. And they've tracked it for many years, and you can see that the depth of the ice has dramatically changed over the years. Now, I mentioned Canada to you. What we're going to look at is this little area, the small island in the centre. And there's been something quite dramatic happen in the last few years. This is actually this area, and it's a glacier which is covering that area. But you may see there some lines. Can you see the lines in the ice? Okay. If you see what that red line is, that is actually a crack in the ice. Now, we see cracks in the ice all the time. We have a fairly large pond in our backyard, and we see the lines in the ice where it cracks. But this is taken from space. That's a big crack in the ice. And if you want to get a close-up, if you want to see a close-up, he says, there you go. Just on the right-hand side there, you can see the crevasse. All right, so this is the crack in the ice that's taking place. Now, this is where it gets interesting, and a little bit scientific, I suppose, but they did a time-lapse of this particular ice area. And what you can see there is it's actually breaking up. If you look through the timeline there, and what ended up happening was it finally broke up, and it had access, all that water, to the sea. And what ended up happening was fresh water went out into the sea and started mixing with the sea. And that's problematic. So, and the reason that's problematic, I'll come to in a minute, but it is a challenge. When you start taking fresh water and mixing it with saline, it can have dramatic effect upon the sea and the current. So we'll talk about that very briefly in a minute. So Time magazine had this cover, a special report on this particular issue, and they said, be worried, be very worried. And, of course, the problem is that the polar bears are losing places to live. They are losing food. They are drowning. And, obviously, being in Canada, we're far more sensitive to this and aware of this because the polar bears live in Canada. So, the issue, of course, is if you've got polar bears, they're the top of the food chain. And there's a whole ecosystem there which is being disrupted as a direct result. This picture here is actually a picture of the thawing of the permafrost. So underneath the ground there's permanent frost in certain parts of the northern hemisphere. But it's no longer permanent because it's actually melting. The frost underneath the ground is melting, and there are consequences of that. Now there's a brother in Canada who works for a mining company, and what happens is a lot of the equipment has to be transferred up to the Arctic. And when that equipment is being transported up there, they're finding the ice roads, which are needed to transfer everything up there, the amount of time those ice roads are around is shortening dramatically to such a degree that these kind of things now are becoming common, that the trucks which are transporting things up to the Arctic are falling through because the ice is melting underneath, it's too thin. And of course, you know, around Alaska, you find these kind of places where the permafrost is just melting and entire communities are being washed into the sea because it's not cold enough under the ground anymore and everything's just being torn apart underneath by the waves. These are called drunken trees, actually. So in certain parts of the world, in the northern hemisphere, the trees and the forests are starting to buckle and they're all starting to fall over because underneath the roots were down in the ground, the permafrost now has melted, and what ends up happening is the trees have got nothing to hold on to and they just fall over. And this is another picture of them there. So this is happening in the northern hemisphere, and it's happening at a rapid rate. This is an interesting picture here. This is a house which is starting to fall apart, and the reason it's falling apart, again, is because the permafrost underneath has just disappeared. It's no longer there. And again, you know, this is a quite interesting picture here because you can see the frost there, and the part closest to us has obviously melted underneath and has sunk. And that's what's going on. But when the permafrost melts, what happens is it releases methane. Dramatic amounts of methane. So it's almost like it's a continuous vicious cycle. What ends up happening is there's warming underneath, everything starts melting, the permafrost releases methane, and you've got more methane going to the atmosphere causing warming. So it's a vicious cycle. In fact, they actually track the amount of methane going into the atmosphere. And they found that since that there's a normal amount, which is about 375 megatons. Oh, dear. Sorry about that. Did it come up? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. About 375 megatons, and that's doubled in the past number of years. So the amount of tons being pumped into the atmosphere has gone up dramatically. But there's an impact as well upon everything else. It is very interesting. In Canada, about 3 weeks ago on the radio, I heard an advert. And it was for Lyme disease.
And they're warning that Lyme disease is in Ontario and it's rapidly spreading across Ontario. And it's a warm, it's a disease which is really in a warm climate. Yeah, West Nile virus is the same. So they've actually got charts now of what's going on in North America by way of West Nile virus, which is more of a tropical disease, which is now spreading throughout the United States and has now reached Canada. So when you warm things up, it means that diseases are going to carry to higher altitudes. So in areas of Africa where there was malaria normally in the lower altitudes, now they're finding malaria at higher altitudes and cities which normally are not traditionally used to having malaria. And that's been an issue which is now becoming more of a problem in a number of countries, mainly those ones which are in the tropics and in Africa. Again, West Nile virus just mentioned, but they're tracking that and they're finding there's a dramatic increase in the amount of cases of the West Nile virus, which again is a tropical disease. This one's interesting. This is actually the oyster farming in, now this will be down in your neck of the woods in Chesapeake Bay. So this is actually a graph which shows the amount of millions of pounds of oysters which were caught each year. Do you know how many they actually farm nowadays? How many oysters, how many million pounds of oysters they farm there a year now? It's been wiped out entirely because it's too warm. Isn't that interesting? This here is called red tide. In fact, the reason we came across this was we were down in Florida. We were going down on a regular basis annually to Florida, and in the Venice area one year, there were fish all over the beach, and we just couldn't understand what was going on. And red tide had come in, and what it is an algae, very toxic algae, which comes in. You can get it in green, purple, different kinds of colours. In fact, here's a quite dramatic picture as well. So that's red tide, and so it kills all the wildlife, and it's a direct consequence of things warming up, the sea warming up, and when that happens, then you get this effect. I just thought this was an interesting picture, this next one here. Because when you think about the Exodus, what happened to the river? Now we know it turned to blood, right? But I just thought that was really quite a dramatic picture. And of course, close up, that's what it looks like. Yeah. But the consequences are, of course, that it kills everything. And the wildlife and the fish were totally wiped out in the area during this period. Or they went somewhere else. But it's affecting that whole area. You see that gulf there? This is all around the Gulf. The red areas are worse than others, but it's affecting the whole area, and of course, the hotter it gets, the worse this is becoming. Now, you might recognize this chap. Does anybody know where he comes from? Actually, he lives in Boston Harbor now. Yeah. It's got so warm up the coast that what's happened is the manatees have found their way all the way up to Boston Harbor. Isn't that interesting? I remember 20 years ago seeing the manatees in Florida, but apparently they found their way all the way up to the north here, all because the water's got that much warmer. And here's an example of how it affects the coral. So within coral, there are actually microorganisms which give it its colour. When you see coral and it's white, all those microorganisms have basically packed their bags and left, leaves it looking white. So what's happening is there's a bleaching of the coral going on, and the reason is because it's too warm for the little organisms within the coral to live, and that's why they're disappearing. Now, I said we'd look at the South Pole. Here's a very interesting situation in the South Pole. And I thought this was dramatic. The area we're looking at is, off to the left-hand side, that peninsula on the left-hand side up there. And it's a place called Adelaide Island. Now, that picture shows you how the ice has been going back year by year. All right, so there's ice which covers the area down there. The continent of Antarctica is actually land, not like the Arctic, which is all ice, is land. But of course, it has a permanent layer of ice. And that from above the Earth, the satellites, you can see that exact area there. You can see how the ice has been breaking off. In fact, you see those black parts on top of the ice? It looks like you can look straight through, down through the ice to the ocean, right? We'll come back to that in a minute. Just bear that in mind. But it doesn't look that significant, really, does it? It's just some ice breaking off. Now, if I show you the next picture, you'll realize how significant that is. Those ice cliffs, 100 to 200 feet high. Alright, so every year it's been moving back significantly, and that amount of ice is going into the sea. And when ice goes into sea, what happens? It's like if you take a glass of water and you start putting ice in it, what happens? The level rises. And that's what's been happening. So in Mauritius and the Seychelles, they've got some very, very serious problems there. Because everything in Mauritius, Seychelles and, what's the other place? It's not Mauritius. There's smaller islands, a chain of small islands in the same area. Which was? No, not Falklands. No, those Maldives. Yes, Maldives. Yeah, excellent. Maldives. The Maldives have got a very serious problem. People really have lost their homes. Their houses don't exist anymore because the water has risen too high for them to actually live on their properties anymore because they're so close to the water. So it is an issue. It's a factor affecting some people around the planet. Again, here's just a picture to show you just how deep those cliffs are and the amount of ice that's melting there. And we're not here tonight to say, let's look at the environmental problems, but we want to get a picture as to how damaged the planet is, because man thinks he can solve the problem. And what we're trying to say is man can't solve the problem, only God can solve the problem. In fact, in Greenland, they're saying that the ice melt is speeding up, and that is actually very interesting, because if you think about it, if I took a slope here, and I put ice on top of it, and I warmed up that slope, what would happen? The ice would accelerate off, wouldn't it? And that is exactly what's happening in Greenland. So what's happening, in fact, and I'll bring up the next slide, and you can't see it on this one, but that's Greenland. That is the amount of melting that's going on. Right, so from 1992 to 2002, if I go to the next one, you'll see those dots. Do you remember what I mentioned, those dots? It's an optical illusion. And so what it is there's water which is melting on top of the ice. Now what scientists thought originally was if you have a block of ice or a sheet of ice, and you pour water on top of it, like you've got an ice rink, all right? Don't want to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins. If you go to the Maple Leafs arena, they have the ice, and you can pour water on the ice and flood it, and what ends up happening is it refreezes, right? So the scientists said what will happen is that water which is melting on top of the ice, that will just refreeze. No, that's not what happened. In fact, a close-up, you'll see how big those dots are. They're entire lakes. And what was happening was those lakes, and the water is quite clever. It can find its way through any little hole and it'll like burrow its way through to the bottom. That's what happens. Water, you got a leak in your basement or something like that, it'll find its way, you know, and drill its way through the ground. That's what it does. And so you can see how those lakes have formed because of the melting of the ice. And so in Greenland they have these things called ice quakes. We'll be talking about a big earthquake tomorrow. This is an ice quake. It's where the ice cracks because it's melting. And they track the number of ice quakes. And so in 1993 to 2000, there's been a dramatic increase in the ice quakes. And this is what's happening. The water, everything's melting, is forming these rivers in the ice. And then what happens is it suddenly finds its way all the way down to the bottom. It goes right down to the rock beneath. It then spreads out underneath the ice, and what happens when you put water underneath ice? It just starts sliding off, and that's exactly what's happening. The ice is sliding off of Greenland. That's basically it. That's what's going on, all right? And I just put that up there because I thought that was a beautiful picture. So there you go. That's an iceberg. Beautiful, isn't it? Okay, so sea level rise is underestimated. And this is the slide I wanted to come to. Remember we showed you in northern Canada the fresh water is spilling out from the lakes in northern Canada, is mixing with the saline. Well, the problem is that that fresh water is now finding its way down. If you look here, those are the currents. You see the warm currents there? But what happens is the currents actually work like a conveyor belt. I'm not sure whether you're aware of this. So the warm water goes like this, it gets up to the northern atmosphere, or northern hemisphere, it cools down, and then the water just drops, because it's cooler, right? It drops underneath, and it goes back underneath, and so on. Scientists are concerned because they think that there's a potential of the fresh water meeting with the saline and stopping that conveyor belt action. Right? So they're a little bit concerned that that may potentially be an issue down the road. And of course they track the saline in the water, and they found that there's been a dramatic reduction in the amount of saline, or the amount of salt in the water up the northern coast of Nova Scotia and in those areas. But it's only not only obviously the melting and the, you know, the extra heat which is causing a problem. There are more people on the planet, there are more mouths to feed, there's more hunting going on and fishing, and the ability to feed people has really taken a dramatic nosedive. And so the deep sea fish stocks have really been affected. When I grew up in the UK, do you remember some of the older ones amongst us, the ice wars, the Iceland wars between England and Iceland, the fishing wars? So there were these fishing wars which took place because Iceland and England, or the UK, were fishing the same areas, and fish stocks were going down, and they of course came into conflict. If you were in the UK now, you'll find that not only has the fish price gone through the roof, but the amount of stocks has gone down dramatically as well. And this is happening all over the world. The amount of fish available to feed people has really taken a hit. And of course we see pictures like this. When we think of the things going on in the world and the challenges, we look at the Exxon Valdez oil spill. I mean, this isn't just isolated. There are a number of these kind of events, and hundreds of miles of coastline are totally destroyed, and the wildlife that goes with it. Now, they're very clever people today. They realize that if you have a net and you go fishing, if you get a bigger net, the more fish you can catch, right? So what they do is they get these bigger nets, and some of them are almost a mile long. The dredging, right, is almost a mile long. But what they end up doing is they dredge everything, including the bottom. And all the coral and everything which is on the bottom of the sea is getting absolutely decimated and destroyed. And you can just see, I mean, there's a double-decker bus down at the bottom there, and you can see the size of that net, all right? So the more fishing they're doing, the more they're realizing that they just don't have enough capability to catch enough fish for the world's population who want to eat fish. And of course, there are other consequences too, such as killing other animals as well. The fisheries, there are some fisheries which have now started to be protected by certain countries and groups of countries who have come together, and they're doing it because they realize there really is a massive shortage of fish available. This is an interesting picture. This is fairly typical. You go to certain parts of the world, you're going to see dried up lakes, but there's a massive issue which the United Nations is dealing with right now, and they're trying to figure out how they're going to deal with the shortage of fresh water in the world. And just to give you an idea, that's a picture of 1995 compared to 2005, and there's been a dramatic shift in the amount of fresh water available, and they call it freshwater stress. And so in the US there is freshwater stress. Canada has a lot of lakes actually, but I'm not getting at the Americans, by the way, when I say this, but I'll just give you a couple of examples as to how it really has affected the US. With the Great Lakes, there has been a dramatic increase in the amount of water in the Great Lakes. Because what's happening is, around Illinois and Indiana and those areas, and Michigan, there's been a lot of water drawn from the lakes for the use of the populations around the lake. Canadians are doing as well, but we just don't have the volume of, you know, people drawing that water. But you see, it's affecting, there's an issue which is there's a lack of water in certain areas where there's a high population of people. The same thing happens over in BC, actually. In BC, there's a river which comes down, I think it ends up becoming the Colorado River, if I remember. It comes out of BC, but it's very interesting because what happens is it comes down into comes down to the US, goes back into Canada, and then comes back into the US again.
But what happens is when it goes down into the US, and then when it comes back to Canada, there's no water left. Because what's happening is, in Seattle, they're drawing off a lot of the water for the population down there. Now, Canada, as I said, is very lucky because there's tons of lakes up there and so on and so forth. We just don't have the vast population. But the point is, there is water stress, not only in Africa and other places, but just here on our doorstep in North America. And it's going to become more of an issue as the population increases. This is interesting. This is in Africa. And so you can see where that red line is. That used to be where the lake was. All right? And this is Lake Chad. Oh, no, sorry, this is the Aral Sea. So you can see over a period of time since 1967 to 2000, there's been a change in the size of that lake. Now, there's a picture of the lake. There's the lake today. You see how dramatic that is. In fact, what happened was it was Brezhnev who was the cause of this, because they were lacking water in Russia to grow cotton. And so what he did is he took all the water off of the Aral Sea, and as a consequence, there's nothing left in the Aral Sea. In fact, if you want to catch a boat to go somewhere, you actually have to go quite a long way, because that's what's happened. So there's just nothing left. This is Lake Chad, similar kind of thing. The water's just dried up there, and it has a massive effect upon the population in the area, of course. And you can see from a satellite exactly how that change took place over a number of years. And if you want to look at Lake Chad close up, this is what you'll see. All right, so there's been dramatic changes, so the freshwater stress is quite dramatic. This is interesting as well, because you know, when you get to a situation where you just don't have anything holding the earth together, there are consequences. We're told that a number of years ago this whole area of Sahara was covered with vegetation of some kind holding it together. Every year it gets worse and worse. The desert creeps even further away from the center, and the desert increases quite dramatically. Now, you'll see in that picture there, it almost looks like somebody's blowing a wind off the Sahara. Can you see that? The Sahara Desert? All right, let me just show you this, and I think you'll find this fascinating. That is a similar picture to the one I showed you earlier, but that actually is the Indian Ocean. And you can see how warm it is in that Indian Ocean there. Now, what's happened is, because the temperature of the sea has increased so dramatically over the last number of years, and I've got to show this to you graphically because it's the only way to really show you, is this is what's happened. There's been a heating up of that area of the Indian Ocean. And because there are winds which are prevailing in the northern hemisphere, they move in that direction. In the southern hemisphere, they move in that direction. And what's happening is all the heat is coming off the Indian Ocean. This is like the suction pump. And that's what's happening. And so that wind coming off the Sahara is what you're seeing. It's the effect of the hot air being blown across the tropics there in that direction, and the sand and the Sahara, that wind is coming off the Sahara. Also, what? Does it really matter? I mean, is wind blowing off the Sahara? Well, it's had a dramatic effect upon North America. Do you know that the accounts of asthma and respiratory diseases have gone up dramatically in North America? Directly because of this issue. I'll tell you the reason why. That there is a piece of coral. Right? That's what it looks like now. And the reason for that is this wind, which has come off the Sahara with this warming effect and this wind blowing across the tropics, has picked up all the microbes from the Sahara, dropped them into the Caribbean, and those microbes have destroyed the coral. So you can see what's happening is the Sahara has nothing left holding it together.
This wind has developed because of the increasing in temperature in the Indian Ocean. It's being pumped across, and it's taking all these microbes across and dropping it into the Caribbean as destroying the living organisms and everything in the Caribbean. You see how it all ties in together. This is a sad situation, but we'll remember it from, it was 1994, if I recall, in Rwanda. And a lot of people say, well, it was all ethnically driven. There were challenges between the tribes in this particular country. It was only a symptom of the problem. The underlying problem was that they were living on top of each other, the different ethnic groups, and there was friction between them. And because they had over-cultivated the land, they didn't have enough land to go around, basically. That's what was going on. And as a symptom of the problem of the environmental issue there, they ended up having one of the worst massacres in the history of the world. In fact, it's estimated that the number of people who were killed during that massacre, and it's at the low end estimated to be about 600,000 people who got killed. Realistically, they're saying it's well over a million. The rate of killing during that time, in 30 days, was higher than the rate of killing that Hitler managed to do in Hitler's Germany, at its peak. That's how bad that massacre was, but of course it didn't get a lot of publicity. But it's related to the environmental issues that took place at the time. Now this is really interesting. Man is very smart, very bright, so he came up with this idea. Why don't we take all the old tires that we can find, let's drop them down into areas off of Florida and the Caribbean. And what will happen is, because they are carbon-based products, what will happen is the corals and so on will grow around these tires and rebuild the entire coral reef in those areas. Well, it's quite brilliant until somebody forgot to actually tie them down. So what they didn't realize was, when they put them down there, they thought you could just drop them down there, leave them, and then the coral reefs would rebuild. Well, no, what actually happened was the tires moved around and destroyed all the other coral. It's like having, going like this around the bottom of the sea, and that's what ended up happening. But I'm sharing these with you just to demonstrate that, we don't see these all the time, but when you see them all together and realize how brilliant man is at managing the planet, then you realize that he really doesn't have much hope of doing what Al Gore said at the beginning, which is to solve the man's problems. Here's actually a really good example of how brilliant man is, and I get a chuckle every time I think about this. You've probably heard of Jacques Cousteau. Okay, so here's the curator and very well-known the Monte Carlo aquarium he was involved with and so forth. What ended up happening was the Monte Carlo aquarium had some special seaweed, which was specially developed, tropical-looking seaweed. And it was developed because it looks much brighter. Right? This type of seaweed is very bright, it looks good in a tank, so it was genetically modified so they could actually create these beautiful tanks with the seaweed. Well, it was wonderful until the point that somebody cleaned out the tank and it went into the Mediterranean. All right? So, and you can see this stuff. Can you see it there? All right? Very beautiful. In fact, I don't know whether you get it in North America or not, but those who have aquariums would use this type of seaweed. So what ended up happening was there would be yachts and boats dropping their anchors in Monte Carlo, and they'd say, hey, why don't we go to Italy? They'd drop their anchor with a seaweed on it and drop a cluster of seaweed down there. And this seaweed has gone all over the Mediterranean. It kills everything in sight. It's toxic. Even fish can't go near it because it's so toxic. Right? Now, man was so clever that he realized that he could actually get these little slugs, drop them into the ocean, and this slug would eat the toxic part of the plant and destroy the plant. So the idea was, what they would do is drop in all of these slugs into the ocean to get rid of the weed, but they realized they had a problem, because if they did that, they didn't know how they were going to get rid of the slugs. So this is a major problem, and they've tried to do a cleanup operation in the Mediterranean to get rid of this problem.
And so we remember at the very beginning of what we talked about this evening, the statement was made that maximum political will, this is a statement which has been made, that maximum political will not meet the minimum requirement to solve the problem of global warming. You know, the experts who look at this and look at what's going on say there's just no way in the world that man on his own can solve this problem. In fact, of course, we recall that this is what Al Gore said. He said, we have to act together to solve this global crisis. Our ability to live is what is at stake. So what ended up happening was a few years ago, there was, around the time when this movie came out, a couple of years later, there was a special initiative put together to bring understanding to the issues regarding the environment and the global crisis, the global warming climate crisis. And so they came up with this whole idea called Live Earth SOS. And so they had this special event called SOS, and you probably recognize that as the dot dot that dash dash dot dot dash dash, which is Morse code for SOS. SOS stands for Save Ourselves. So man says, we can solve this problem. We can save ourselves. You see, when there is the increase in the population going on right now, and man's creature comforts are increasing at a rapid rate it is, how is man going to be able to solve the problem that it has now when the population growth is going to increase as much as it is expected to in the next 20 years? And so when you just look at that one picture there, you see the amount of energy that man needs just there. Then you look at North America and you look at China and see the amount of energy that man is consuming on a regular basis and think, really, is man going to solve this problem when he's got to continue pumping coal into the atmosphere? You know that China is putting one coal-powered plant online every 30 days. Coal power plant. All right. So what's happening is instead of it going down, the emissions are going up dramatically. So it's like a vicious cycle. They just can't solve the problem. And we know the world population's increased dramatically, but the estimation for world population growth is incredible, almost exponential over the next 20 years. So the problems can only get worse if the Lord remains away. In the Amazon, we know how much of the forest is being destroyed on a regular basis, and when they do that, they burn carbon emissions into the atmosphere and it contributes to the problem. And of course, when we look at the amount of area being destroyed, it's the equivalent of four football fields a day which is being destroyed. That's incredible. But that's what's happening. When you consider the size of the Amazon and compare that to Europe, you can see the size we're talking about that's under attack. What happens is when they do destroy the trees, it's the similar as what we saw earlier. There are direct consequences to the environment. These are parts of the Amazon now, which don't exist. There are no tributaries and no rivers there anymore. And of course it affects the whole ecosystem in the area. And so we see pictures like this as a result of the trees being taken down as they have been. And so the estimates which the scientists have come up with, this is normal, the amount of trees covering the planet. This is the progression until they're expecting by 2025 that to be the amount of forestry left covering the planet by 2025. So all these things coming together, when we look at them all together, we're seeing there's a real challenge for the planet that man seems to think that he can solve. In fact, in 1986, this was a cover of Time magazine. It was unusual because what happened was every year up until that point, they'd always had the person of the year or the man of the year on the front cover. For the first time, they put the planet on the front cover because their concerns with what's going on with the world were so dramatic, the scientists said there's got to be some attention brought to it. And in that magazine, there was an article, and it said this: this year, the earth spoke, like God warning Noah of the deluge. Isn't that interesting? Based on what we were saying earlier today. Its message was loud and clear, and suddenly people began to listen, to ponder what portents the message held.
This year's bout of freakish weather and environmental horror stories seem to act as a powerful catalyst for worldwide public opinion. Everybody suddenly sensed that this gyrating globe, this precious repository of all life that we know of, was in danger. No single individual, no event, no movement captured the imaginations or dominated headlines more than the clump of rock and soil and water and air that is our common home. A couple of scientists said this. They said, all nations are tied together as to how their common fate. We are facing a problem which is, how are we going to keep the single resource we have, namely the world, viable? We do not have generations, we only have years in which to attempt to turn things around. That was 1986. 2006, Al Gore comes out with his movie and tries to bring attention to some of these issues. How well did they do between 1986 and 2006? It got worse, didn't it? And every year it's getting worse and worse. And so when we look at, you know, the issue of global warming, for instance, and we can look at a number of the environmental issues, we look at, you know, this. You know, some say that the global warming issue, the environmental issue, is just a hoax. There aren't real issues we're facing as a race and with the planet. There's no need for a solution, but I think we can, you know, easily scrub that out based on what we've seen tonight. One might say that global warming is not a hoax, but man can solve the environmental problem. And I think we can probably cross that one out too based on man's record. Global warming and the environmental issue is not a hoax. Man cannot solve the environmental crisis. Earth is doomed. Well, we certainly don't believe that. But we do believe that man cannot solve the crisis that he's facing regarding the land and the planet. And the reason we believe that is because of this. God made a promise, didn't he? He promised that come seed time and harvest, he would not destroy the earth again by a flood. He's promised, with the promise of that. Brother Ryan's not here, so I can ask this question, and I know he's not going to answer it, but does anybody know what the shape of a rainbow is? It's a circle. Yes, it is. So when you're actually in a plane and you look through rain, you actually see a circle from the air. And we'll be talking about that in a bit more detail when we look at divine worship tomorrow. But that was a symbol put in the air, in the sky, for us to realize that God has a promise he's made. He's promised the kingdom, he promised the time of peace, and he's promised he's not going to destroy the earth with water again. And so, there was an amazing promise left on record. God said, this is the sign of the covenant I am making between me and you, and every living creature with you, a covenant for all generations to come. Whenever I bring clouds over the earth and the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will remember my covenant between me and you and all living creatures. Never again will the waters become a flood to destroy all life. Whenever the rainbow appears in the clouds, I will see it and remember my everlasting covenant. God has an everlasting covenant he's made. I will not again curse the ground anymore for man's sake, for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite anymore everything living as I have done. While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. That's a remarkable promise, isn't it? And it's a promise that we believe in. Of course, in the very beginning, God said that he saw everything that he had made, and it was very good. Something has gone dramatically wrong. Man was told to look after the garden, to dress it, and to keep it. And so at one point in time, it was a beautiful place. And now it's not quite the same as it used to be. And so there'll come a point in time, as part of the policies of the kingdom, some policies will be put in place to put right the problems we have today. There'll be no pollution. And so, in Revelation chapter 11, we read, thy wrath is come, the time of the dead, that they should be judged, and that thou shouldest give reward to them that fear thy name, small and great, and shouldest destroy them which destroy the earth, or the word is corrupt the earth. And the temple of God was opened in heaven, and there were lightnings and voices, thunders and an earthquake, and great hail. Again, we're told a king will reign righteously and princes will rule justly. Each will be like a refuge from the wind and a shelter from the storm, like streams of water in a dry country, like a shade of a huge rock in a parched place. And some, we would believe that a lot of these problems, the water stress and so forth, will be done away with. They won't be problems anymore. Obviously, it's a symbolic language of the great abundance and the mercy that God's going to show to men and women in the earth. But it's also language which we can apply to what we've just seen, that where we see water stress, where we see lakes disappearing, God is going to solve that problem to such a degree there's going to be environmental rejuvenation. Because the desert shall blossom as the rose, we're told. It shall blossom abundantly, right in the desert. And so we might see a picture like this. But the promise is that it will become like this. And these are actually desert roses. Now that's not a desert rose, that one is up there on the top right hand side. And so there's going to be rainfall and abundance during that time, because the parched ground shall become a pool and the thirsty land springs of water. Where shall the grass with reeds and rushes? And so we remember seeing that picture earlier. And so by God's power, he'll be able to make something like that look like that again. Or something like that look like that again. But there's going to be food for everybody as well. Because the Bible says that there shall be an handful of corn in the earth upon the top of mountains. The fruit thereof shall shake like Lebanon. And they of the city shall flourish like the grass of the earth. Amos says, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that the plowman shall overtake the reaper, the treader of grapes him that soweth seed, and the mountains shall drop sweet wine, and all hills shall melt. There'll be tremendous abundance, tremendous ability for people to go and plow and to generate food in the earth like never before. And so something which looks like that may end up looking like that. And where there was a lack of fish in the sea, there'll be great abundance once again. And where the corals have been destroyed, we will see them rejuvenated and brought back to life. Again, Isaiah says, they shall feed in the ways, their pastures be in all high places. They shall not hunger nor thirst, neither shall the heat nor sun smite them. For he that hath mercy on them shall lead them, even by the springs of water shall he guide them. And so a stream which maybe looks like that will perhaps be brought back to life and look like that. They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more, neither shall the sun light on them, nor any heat. And so there'll be sufficient food for everyone. For the seed shall be prosperous, the vine shall give her fruit, the ground shall give her increase, and the heavens shall give their dew. And I will cause the remnant of this people to possess all these things. Again, Amos. He said, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that the plowman shall overtake the reaper and the treader of grapes. And so when we see a scene like this, and like this, they'll be fed with food like this. And so when we look at those pictures where men and women and children are suffering because of hunger and not having the food that they need and the water, we know that God in his great provision can feed everybody. And this is one of the things which will happen in the kingdom age, where incurable diseases will disappear. The eyes of the blind shall be opened, the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped, then shall the lame man leap as a hart, as we read earlier. And so, you know, when we think about diseases and everything, right now, the world is facing a serious challenge. They've never seen the rate of Ebola traveling across the countries of Africa like they have recently. And of course, only this week, there was a case in Dallas, Texas. So, you know, this is causing men's heart to fail them for fear, but these diseases exist. But the promise is that there's a way of escaping death.
We're told that God will wipe away all tears from their eyes. There shall be no more death, neither sorrow, nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. And so while we see the challenges that are going on with the land, with the planet, with the environment, with global warming, and man saying that I can fix these problems, we know the truth. Man cannot fix the problems. The only way these problems can get fixed is by the Lord Jesus Christ returning to set up his kingdom, and by God's grace we'll be there to help him in that day. And one of those things which we will do is, by God's grace, work with him and serve in the temple of our God and act as kings and priests in that day. And that's what we'll look at, God willing, in the morning when we look at the theme of divine worship in the age to come.